Chapter 7 Playing with Fire. With the sun barely above the horizon the next morning, Egwene presented herself at the doors to Rand's chambers, followed by a foot-dragging Elaine. The daughter heir wore a long-sleeved dress of pale blue silk, cut in the Tyran fashion and pulled low after some little discussion. A necklace of sapphires like a deep morning sky and another strand woven into her red-gold curls showed up the blue of her eyes. Despite the damp warmth, Egwene wore a plain deep-red scarf, as large as a shawl around her shoulders. Avienda had supplied the scarf and the sapphires, too. Surprisingly, the Aiel woman had a tidy store of such things somehow. For all she had known they were there, Egwene gave a start when the Aiel guards glided to their feet with startling suddenness. Elaine let out a small gasp, but quickly eyed them with that regal bearing she managed so well. It seemed to have no effect on these sun-dark men. The six were Shaeen Metal, stone dogs, and appeared relaxed for Aiel, meaning they seemed to be looking everywhere, seemed ready to move in any direction. Egwene drew herself up in imitation of Elaine. She did wish she could do that as well as the daughter heir, and announced, We want to see how the Lord Dragon's wounds are. Her remark was plainly foolish, if they knew much about healing, but that likelihood was small. Few people did, and Aiel probably less than most. She had not intended to give any reason for being there. It was enough that they thought her eyes Sedai. But when the Aiel appeared almost to spring out of the black marble floor, it suddenly seemed a good idea. Not that they were making any move to stop Elaine and her, of course, but these men were all so tall, so stone-faced, and they carried those short spears and horn bows as if using them would be as natural as breathing and as easy. With those light-colored eyes regarding her so intently, it was all too easy to remember stories of black-veiled Aiel without mercy or pity, of the Aiel War and the men like these who had destroyed every army sent against them until the last— who had only turned back to the waste after fighting the allied nations to a standstill during 3 blood-soaked days and nights before Tar Valon itself. She very nearly embraced Saidar. Gaul, the stone dog's leader, nodded, looking down at Elaine and her with a touch of respect. He was a handsome man, in a rugged way, a little older than Nynaeve, with eyes as green and clear as polished gems, and long eyelashes so dark they seemed to outline his eyes in black. They may be troubling him. He is in a foul mood this morning. Gaul grinned, just a quick flash of white teeth, in understanding of a temper when wounded. He has chased off a group of these high lords already and threw one of them out himself. What was his name? Turian, another even taller man replied. He had an arrow knocked, the short curved bow held almost casually. His gray eyes rested on the two women for an instant, then went back to searching among the anteroom's columns. Turian, Gaul agreed. I thought he would slide as far as those pretty carvings. He pointed a spear to the ring of stiff-standing defenders. But he came short by 3 paces. I lost a good Tyran hanging, all hawks in gold thread, to Mangin. The taller man gave a brief, contented smile. Egwene blinked at the image of Rand physically pitching a high lord across the floor. He had never been violent, far from it. How much had he changed? She had been too busy with Joya and Amiko, and he too busy with Moiraine or Lan or the high lords, to do more than speak in passing. A few words about home here and there, about how the Beltane festival might have gone this year, and what Sunday would be like. It had all been so brief. How much had he changed? We have to see him, Elaine said, a slight tremor in her voice. Gaul made a bow, grounding the point of one spear on the black marble. Of course, Aes Sedai. It was with some trepidation that Egwene entered Rand's chambers, and Elaine's face spoke volumes of the effort those few steps took. No evidence of last night's horror remained, unless it was the absence of mirrors. Lighter patches marked the wall panels where those hanging there had been taken away. Not that the room came anywhere near neatness, Books lay everywhere, on everything, some lying open as if abandoned in the middle of a page, and the bed was still unmade. The crimson draperies were pulled open on all the windows, facing westward toward the river that was Tyr's heart vein, and Kalandor sparkled like polished crystal on a huge gilded stand of surprising gaudiness. Egwene thought the stand the ugliest thing she had ever seen decorating a room, until she glimpsed the silver wolves savaging a golden stag on the mantel above the fireplace. Scant breezes off the river kept the room surprisingly cool compared to the rest of the stone. Rand sat in his shirt sleeves, sprawled in a chair with one leg over the arm and a leather-bound book propped against his knee. At the sound of their footsteps, he snapped the book shut and dropped it among the others on the scroll-worked carpet, bounding to his feet, ready to fight. The scowl on his face faded as he took in who they were. For the first time in the stone, Egwene looked for changes in him and found them. How many months before then since she had seen him last? Enough for his face to have grown harder, for the openness that had once been there to fade. He moved differently, too, a little like Lan, a little like the Aiel. With his height and his reddish hair, and eyes that seemed now blue, now gray as the light took them, he looked all too much like an Aiel man, too much for comfort. But had he changed inside?
"I thought you were someone else," he mumbled,
sharing out embarrassed glances between them. That was the Rand she knew, even to the flush that rose in his cheeks every time he looked at her or Elaine, either one.
"Some people want things I can't give, things I will not give."
Suspicion grew on his face with shocking suddenness, and his tone hardened.
"What do you want? Did Moiraine send you? Are you supposed to convince me to do what she wants?"
"Don't be a goose," Egwene said sharply before she thought. "I do not want you to start a war." Elaine added in pleading tones,
"We came to help you, if we can."
That was one of their reasons, and the easiest to bring up, they had decided over breakfast.
"You know about her plans for—"
he began roughly, then made a sudden shift.
"Help me? How? That is what Moiraine says."
Egwene sternly folded her arms beneath her breasts, holding the scarf tight, in the way Nynaeve used to address the village council when she meant to have her way no matter how stubborn they were. It was too late to start over. The only thing was to go on as she had begun.
"I told you not to be a fool, Randall Thor. You may have Tyrans bowing to your boots, but I remember when Nynaeve switched your bottom for letting Matt talk you into stealing a jar of apple brandy."
Elaine kept her face carefully composed. Too carefully. It was plain to Egwene that she wanted to laugh out loud. Rand did not notice, of course. Men never did. He grinned at Egwene, close to laughing himself.
"We had just turned 13. She found us asleep behind your father's stable, and our heads hurt so much we didn't even feel her switch."
That was not at all the way Egwene recalled it. "Not like when you threw that bowl at her head, remember? She'd dosed you with dogwood tea because you'd been moping about for a week, and as soon as you tasted it, you hit her with her best bowl. Light, did you squeal? When was that? 2 years ago, come this—"
"We are not here to talk over old times," Egwene said, shifting the scarf irritably. It was thin wool, but still far too hot. Really, he did have the habit of remembering the most unfortunate things.
He grinned as if he knew what she was thinking, and went on in better humor.
"You are here to help me, you say. With what? I don't suppose you know how to make a High Lord keep his word when I'm not staring over his shoulder, or how to stop unwanted dreams. I could surely use help with—"
Eyes darting to Elaine and back to her, he made another abrupt shift.
"What about the old tongue? Did you learn any of that in the White Tower?"
Without waiting for an answer, he began rooting through the volumes scattered across the carpet. There were more on the chairs, among the tumbled bedclothes.
"I have a copy here, somewhere, of—"
"Rand," Egwene raised her voice. "Rand, I cannot read the old tongue." She shot a look at Elaine, warning her not to admit to any such knowledge.
They had not come to translate the prophecies of the dragon for him. The sapphires in the daughter heir's hair swayed as she nodded agreement. We had other things to learn. He straightened from the books with a sigh. It was too much to hope. For a moment he seemed on the point of saying more, but stared at his boots. Egwene wondered how he managed to deal with the High Lords in all their arrogance if she and Elaine put him so out of countenance. We came to help you with channeling, she told him, with the power. What Moiraine claimed was supposed to be true. A woman could not teach a man to channel any more than she could teach him how to bear a child. Egwene was not so sure. She had felt something woven from Saidin once, or rather, she had felt nothing, something blocking her own flows as surely as stone dammed water. But she had learned as much outside the tower as within. Surely in her knowledge there was something she could teach him, some guidance she could offer. If we can, Elaine added. Suspicion flashed across his face again. It was unnerving how his mood changed so quickly. I have more chance of reading the old tongue than you do of... Are you sure this isn't Moiraine's doing? Did she send you here? Thinks she can convince me by some roundabout way, does she? Some twisty eyes that I plot I'll not see the point of until I am mired in it? He grunted sourly and pulled a dark green coat from the floor behind one of the chairs, shrugging into it hastily. I agreed to meet some more of the High Lords this morning. If I don't keep an eye on them, they just find ways to get around what I want. They'll learn sooner or later. I rule Tyr now. Me, the Dragon Reborn. I will teach them. You will have to excuse me. Egwene wanted to shake him. He ruled Tyr? Well, perhaps he did if it came to that, but she remembered a boy with a lamb nestled inside his coat, proud as a rooster because he had driven off the wolf that tried to take it. He was a shepherd, not a king, and even if he had called to give himself airs, it was no good to him that he did. She was about to tell him as much, but before she could, Elaine spoke up fiercely. No one sent us. No one. We came because we care for you. Perhaps it will not work, but you can try. If we care enough to try, you can try too. Is it so unimportant to you that you cannot spare us an hour? For your life? He stopped buttoning up his coat, staring at the daughter heir so intently that for a moment Egwene thought he had forgotten she was there. With a shiver, he pulled his eyes away. Glancing at Egwene, he shifted his feet and frowned at the floor. I will try, he muttered. It'll do no good, but I will... What do you want me to do? Egwene drew a deep breath. She had not thought convincing him would be this easy. He had always been like a boulder buried in mud when he decided to dig his heels in, which he did far too often. Look at me, she said, embracing Saidar. She let the power fill her as completely as it ever had, more completely, accepting every drop she could hold. It was as if light suffused every particle of her, as if the light itself filled every cranny. Life seemed to burst inside her like fireworks. She had never before let this much in. It was a shock to realize she was not quivering. Surely she could not bear this glorious sweetness. She wanted to revel in it, to dance and sing, to simply lie back and let it roll through her, over her. She made herself speak. What do you see? What do you feel? Look at me, Rand. He lifted his head slowly, still frowning. I see you. What am I supposed to see? Are you touching the source? Egwene Moiraine has channeled around me 100 times, and I never saw anything except what she did. It doesn't work that way. Even I know that much. I am stronger than Moiraine, she told him firmly. She would be whimpering on the floor, or insensible if she tried to hold as much as I hold now. It was true, though she had never before rated the Aes Sedai's ability so closely. It cried out to be used, this power pulsing through her stronger than heart blood. With this much she could do things Moiraine could not dream of doing. The wound in Rand's side that Moiraine could never heal completely. She did not know healing, It was considerably more complex than anything she had ever done, but she had watched Nynaeve heal, and perhaps with this great pool of the power filling her, she could see something of how that could be healed. Not to do it, of course, only to see. Carefully, she spun out hair-fine flows of air and water and spirit, the powers used for healing, and felt for his old injury. One touch, and she recoiled, shivering, snatching back her weaving. Her stomach churned as if every meal she had ever eaten wanted to come up. It seemed that all the darkness in the world rested there in Rand's side, all the world's evil in a festering sore only lightly covered by tender scar tissue. A thing like that would soak up healing flows like drops of water on dry sand. How could he bear the pain? Why was he not weeping? From first thought to action had taken only a moment. Shaken and desperately hiding it, she went on without a pause. You are as strong as I know it. You must be. Feel, Rand. What do you feel? Light. What can heal that? Can anything?
I don't feel anything, he muttered, shifting his feet. Goosebumps, and no wonder. It's not that I don't trust you, Egwene, but I cannot help being nervous when a woman is channeling around me. I am sorry.
She did not bother explaining to him the difference between channeling and merely embracing the true source. There was so much he did not know, even compared to her own scant knowledge. He was a blind man trying to work a loom by touch, with no idea of colors or what the threads or even the loom looked like. With an effort, she released Saidar, and it was an effort. Part of her wanted to cry at the loss. I am not touching the source now, Rand. She stepped closer and peered up at him. Do you still feel goosebumps? No, but that's just because you told me. He gave an abrupt shrug of his shoulders. You see, I started thinking about it, and I have them again. Egwene smiled triumphantly. She did not need to look around at Elaine to confirm what she had already sensed, what they had agreed upon earlier for this point. You can sense a woman embracing the source, Rand. Elaine is doing just that right now. He squinted at the daughter heir. It doesn't matter what you see or don't see. You felt it. We have that much. Let's see what else we can find. Rand, embrace the source. Embrace Saidin. The words came out hoarsely. They had agreed on this too, she and Elaine. He was Rand, not a monster from the stories, and they had agreed on it. But still, asking a man to... The wonder was that she had gotten the words out at all. Do you see anything? She asked Elaine. Or feel anything? Rand still doled out glances between them, in between staring at the floor and sometimes blushing. Why was he so out of countenance? Studying him fixedly, the daughter heir shook her head. He could just be standing there for all I can tell. Are you sure he is doing anything? He can be stubborn, but he isn't foolish. At least he isn't foolish most of the time. Well, stubborn or foolish or something else, I feel nothing at all. Egwene frowned at him. You said you would do as we asked, Rand. Are you? If you felt something, so should I, and I do not. She broke off with a stifled yelp. Something had pinched her bottom. Rand's lips twitched, clearly fighting a grin. That, she told him crisply, was not nice. He tried to keep his face innocent, but the grin slipped. You said you wanted to feel something, and I just thought. His sudden roar made Egwene jump. Clapping a hand to his left buttock, he hobbled in a pained circle. Blood and ashes, Egwene! There was no need to... He fell off into deeper, inaudible mutters. Egwene was just as glad she did not understand. She took the opportunity to flap the scarf for a little air and shared a small smile with Elaine. The glow faded around the daughter heir. They both came close to giggling as they rubbed themselves surreptitiously. That should show him. About 100 for one, Egwene estimated. Turning back to Rand, she put on her sternest face. I would have expected something like that from Matt. I thought you, at least, had grown up. We came here to help you if we can. Try to cooperate. Do something with the power, something that isn't childish. Perhaps we will be able to sense that. Hunched, he glared at them. Do something, he muttered.
You had no call to... I'll limp for... You want me to do something?
Suddenly, she lifted into the air, and Elaine, too. They stared at each other wide-eyed as they floated a pace above the carpet. There was nothing holding them, no flows Egwene could feel or see. Nothing. Her mouth tightened. He had no right to do this, no right at all, and it was time he learned it. The same sort of shield of spirit that cut Joya off from the source would stop him, too. Aes Sedai used it on the rare men they found who could channel. She opened herself to Sayidar, and her stomach sank. Sayidar was there, she could feel its warmth and light, but between her and the true source stood something, nothing, an absence that shut her away from the source like a stone wall. She felt hollow inside until panic welled up to fill her. A man was channeling and she was caught in it. He was Rand, of course, but dangling there like a basket, helpless, all she could think of was a man channeling and the taint on Saidin. She tried to shout at him, but all that came out was a croak. You want me to do something? Rand growled. A pair of small tables flexed their legs awkwardly, the wood creaking, and began to stumble about in a stiff parody of dance, gilt flaking off and falling. Do you like this? Fire flared up in the fireplace, filling the hearth from side to side, burning on stone bare of ashes. Or this? The tall stag and wolves above the fireplace began to soften and slump. Thin streams of gold and silver flowed out from the mass, fining down to shining threads, snaking, weaving themselves into a narrow sheet of metallic cloth. The length of glittering fabric hung in the air as it grew, its far end still linked to the slowly melting statuette on the stone mantel. Do something, Rand said. Do something. Do you have any idea what it is like to touch Saidin, to hold it? Do you? I can feel the madness waiting, seeping into me. Abruptly, the capering tables burst into flame like torches, dancing still. Books spun in the air, pages fluttering. The mattress on the bed erupted, showering feathers across the room like snow. Feathers falling onto the burning tables filled the room with their sharp, sooty stink. For a moment, Rand stared wildly at the blazing tables. Then, whatever was holding Egwene and Elaine vanished, along with the shield. Their heels thumped onto the carpet in the same instant the flames went out as if sucked into the wood they had been consuming. The blaze in the fireplace winked out as well, and the books fell to the floor in a worse jumble than before. The length of gold and silver cloth dropped too, along with strands of rough melted metal, no longer liquid or even hot. Only three largish lumps, two silver and one gold, remained on the mantel, cold and unrecognizable. Egwene had staggered into Elaine as they landed. They clutched each other for support, but Egwene felt the other woman doing exactly what she was doing, embracing Sayidar as quickly as she could. In moments she had a shield ready to throw around Rand if he even appeared to be channeling, but he stood stunned, staring at the charred tables with feathers still drifting down around him, flecking his coat. He did not seem to be a danger now, but the room was certainly a mess. She wove tiny flows of air to pull all the floating feathers together, and those already on the carpet as well. As an afterthought, she added those on his coat. The rest of it he could have the Majira straighten, or see to himself. Rand flinched as the feathers floated past him to alight on the tattered ruins of the mattress. It did nothing for the smell, burned feathers and burned wood, but at least the room was neater, and the open windows and faint breezes were already lessening the stench. The Majira may not want to give me another, he said with a strained laugh. A mattress a day is probably more than she is willing to... He avoided looking at her or Elaine. I'm sorry. I did not mean to... Sometimes it runs wild. Sometimes there's nothing there when I reach for it, and sometimes it does things I don't... I'm sorry. Perhaps you had better go. I seem to say that a lot. He blushed again and cleared his throat. I am not touching the source, but maybe you had best go. We are not done yet, Egwene said gently. More gently than she felt, she wanted to box his ears. The idea of picking her up like that, shielding her, and Elaine. But he was on the ragged edge. Of what, she did not know, and she did not want to find out. Not now. Not here. With so many exclaiming over their strength, everyone said she and Elaine would be among the strongest Aes Sedai, if not the strongest, in 1,000 years or more. She had assumed they were as strong as he. Near to it, at least. She had just been rudely disabused. Perhaps Nynaeve could come close if she was angry enough, but Egwene knew she herself could never have done what he just had, split her flows that many ways, worked that many things at once. Working 2 flows at once was far more than twice as hard as working 1 of the same magnitude, and working 3 much more than twice again working 2. He had to have been weaving 12. He did not even look tired, yet exertion with the power took energy. She very much feared he could handle her and Elaine both like kittens. Kittens he might decide to drown if he went mad. But she would not, could not, just walk away. That would be the same as quitting, and she was not made that way. She meant to do what she had come there for, all of it, and he was not going to chase her off short of it. Not him or anything else. Elaine's blue eyes were filled with determination, and the moment Egwene fell silent, she added in a much firmer voice, "And we will not go until we are. You said you would try. You must try."
"I did say that, didn't I?" he murmured after a time. "At least we can sit down."
Not looking at the blackened tables or the band of metallic cloth lying crumpled on the carpet, he led them, limping slightly, to high-backed chairs near the windows. They had to move books from the red silk cushions in order to sit. Egwene's chair held volume 12 of The Treasures of the Stone of Tyr, a dusty, wood-bound book entitled Travels in the Aiel Waste with Various Observations on the Savage Inhabitants, and a thick, tattered leather volume called Dealings with the Territory of Mayen, 500 to 750 of the New Era. Elaine had a bigger stack to move, but Rand hurriedly took them from her along with those from his chair and put them all on the floor, where the pile promptly fell over. Egwene laid hers neatly beside them. "What do you want me to do now?" He sat on the edge of his seat, hands on his knees. "I promise I won't do anything but what you ask this time." Egwene bit her tongue to keep from telling him that promise came a bit late. Perhaps she had been a little vague in what she had asked for, but that was no excuse. Still, that was something to be dealt with another time. She realized she was thinking of him as just Rand again, but he looked as if he had just splashed mud on her best dress and was worried she would not believe it an accident. Yet she had not let go of Saidar, and neither had Elaine. There was no need to be foolish. "This time," she said, "we just want you to talk. How do you embrace the source? Just tell us. Take it step by step, slowly."
"More like wrestling than embracing," he grunted. "Step by step? Well, first I imagine a flame, and then I push everything into it. Hate, fear, nervousness, everything. When they're all consumed, there's an emptiness, a void inside my head. I am in the middle of it, but I'm a part of whatever I am concentrating on, too."
"That sounds familiar," Egwene said. "I've heard your father talk about a trick of concentration he uses to win the archery competitions, what he calls the flame and the void."
Rand nodded, sadly it seemed. She thought he must be missing home and his father.
"Tam taught it to me first, and Lan uses it too with the sword. Selina, someone I met once, called it the oneness. A good many people seem to know about it, whatever they call it. But I found out for myself that when I was inside the void, I could feel Sidene, like a light just beyond the corner of my eye in the emptiness. There's nothing but me and that light. Emotion, even thought, is outside. I used to have to take it bit by bit, but it all comes at once now. Most of it does, anyway. Most of the time."
"Emptiness," Elaine said with a shiver. "No emotion. That doesn't sound very much like what we do."
"Yes, it does," Egwene insisted eagerly. "Rand, we just do it a little differently, that's all. I imagine myself to be a flower, a rosebud. Imagine it until I am the rosebud. That is like your void, in a way. The rosebud's petals open out to the light of Saidar, and I let it fill me, all light and warmth and life and wonder. I surrender to it, and by surrendering, I control it. That was the hardest part to learn, really, how to master Saidar by submitting, but it seems so natural now that I do not even think about it. That is the key to it, Rand, I'm sure. You must learn to surrender.
He was shaking his head vigorously. That's nothing like what I do, he protested. Let it fill me? I have to reach out and take hold of Sidene. Sometimes there's still nothing there when I do, nothing I can touch, but if I didn't reach for it, I could stand there forever and nothing would happen. It fills me all right once I take hold, but surrender to it. He raked his fingers through his hair. Egwene, if I surrendered, even for a minute, Sidene would consume me. It's like a river of molten metal, an ocean of fire, all the light of the sun gathered in one spot. I must fight it to make it do what I want, fight it to keep from being eaten up. He sighed. I know what you mean about life filling you, though, even with the taint turning my stomach. Colors are sharper, smells clearer. Everything is more real somehow. I don't want to let go once I have it, even while it's trying to swallow me. But the rest... Face the facts, Egwene. The Tower is right about this. Accept it for the truth because it is.
She shook her head. I will accept it when it is proved to me.
She did not sound as sure as she wanted to, not as sure as she had been. What he told sounded like some twisted half-reflection of what she did, similarities only emphasizing differences. Yet there were similarities. She would not give up.
Can you tell the flows apart? Air, water, spirit, earth, fire?
Sometimes, he said slowly. Not usually. I just take what I need to do what I want, fumble for it mostly. It's very strange. Sometimes I need to do a thing and I do it, but only afterward do I know what it was I did or how. It's almost like remembering something I've forgotten. But I can remember how to do it again, most of the time.
Yet you do remember how, she insisted. How did you set fire to those tables?
She wanted to ask him how he had made them dance. She thought she saw a way with air and water, but she wanted to start with something simple. Lighting a candle and putting it out were things a novice could do. Rand's face took on a pained expression. I don't know, he sounded embarrassed. When I want fire for a lamp or a fireplace, I just make it, but I do not know how. I don't really need to think to do things with fire. That almost stood to reason. Of the five powers, fire and earth had been strongest in men in the Age of Legends, and air and water in women. Spirit had been shared equally. Egwene hardly had to think to use air or water once she had learned to do a thing in the first place, but the thought did not further their purpose. This time it was Elaine who pressed him.
Do you know how you extinguished them? You seemed to think before they went out.
That I do remember, because I don't believe I have ever done it before. I took in the heat from the tables and spread it into the stone of the fireplace. A fireplace wouldn't even notice that much heat.
Elaine gasped, unconsciously cradling her left arm for a moment, and Egwene winced in sympathy. She remembered when that arm had been a mass of blisters because the daughter heir had done what Rand had just described, and with just the lamp in her room. Shiriam had threatened to let the blisters heal by themselves. She had not done it, but she had threatened. It was one of the warnings novices were given. Never draw heat in. A flame could be extinguished using air or water, but using fire to pull the heat away meant disaster with a flame of any size. It was not a matter of strength, so Shiriam had said. Heat once taken in could not be gotten rid of, not by the strongest woman ever to come out of the White Tower. Women had actually burst into flame themselves that way. Women had burst into flame. Egwene drew a ragged breath.
What's the matter? Rand asked.
I think you just proved the difference to me, she sighed.
Oh, does that mean you're ready to give up?
No.
She tried to make her voice softer.
She was not angry with him.
Exactly.
She was not sure who she was angry with. Maybe my teachers were right, but there has to be a way, some way. Only I cannot think of one right now.
You tried, he said simply. I thank you for that. It is not your fault it did not work.
There must be a way, Egwene muttered, and Elaine murmured, We will find it, we will.
Of course you will, he said with a forced cheerfulness, but not today.
He hesitated.
I suppose you'll be going, then. He sounded half regretful, half glad. I do need to tell the High Lords a few things about taxes this morning. They seem to think they can take as much from a farmer in a poor year as a good without beggaring him. And I suppose you have to get back to questioning those dark friends. He frowned. He had not said anything, but Egwene was sure he would like to keep them as far from the Black Aja as possible. She was a little surprised he had not already tried to make them return to the tower. Perhaps he knew that she and Nynaeve would put a flea in his ear the size of a horse if he tried. We do, she said firmly. But not right away. Rand? The time had come to bring up her second reason for being there, but it was even more difficult than she had expected. This was going to hurt him. Those sad, wary eyes convinced her it would, but it had to be done. She snugged the scarf around her. It enveloped her from shoulders to waist. Rand, I cannot marry you.
I know, he said.
She blinked. He was not taking it as hard as she expected. She told herself that was good. I do not mean to hurt you. Really, I don't. But I do not want to marry you.
I understand, Egwene. I know what I am. No woman could...
You wool-brained idiot, she snapped. This had nothing to do with you channeling. I do not love you. At least, not in the way to want to marry you.
Rand's jaw dropped. You don't love me? He sounded as surprised as he looked, and hurt, too.
Please try to understand, she said in a gentler voice. People change, Rand. Feelings change. When people are apart, sometimes they grow apart. I love you as I would a brother, perhaps more than a brother, but not to marry. Can you understand that?
He managed a rueful grin. I really am a fool. I didn't really believe you might change, too. Egwene, I do not want to marry you either. I did not want to change. I didn't try to, but it happened. If you knew how much this means to me, not having to pretend, not being afraid I'll hurt you. I never wanted to do that, Egwene. Never to hurt you.
She very nearly smiled. He was putting on such a brave face. He was actually quite close to convincing. I'm glad you are taking it so well, she told him in a soft voice. I did not want to hurt you either, and now I really must go.
Rising from her chair, she bent to brush a kiss across his cheek.
You will find someone else.
Of course, he said, getting to his feet, the lie loud in his voice.
You will.
She slipped out with a sense of satisfaction and hurried across the anteroom, letting Saidar go as she took the scarf from her shoulders. The thing was abominably hot. He was ready for Elaine to pick up like a lost puppy if she handled him the way they had discussed. She thought Elaine would manage him nicely, now and later. For as much later as they had, something had to be done about his control. She was willing to admit that what she had been told was right. No woman could teach him. Fish and birds. But that was not the same as giving up. Something had to be done, so a way had to be found. That horrible wound and the madness were problems for later, but they would be dealt with eventually, somehow. Everyone said Two Rivers men were stubborn, but they could not match Two Rivers women.